जय विष्णुपाद परमहंस परिव्राजकाचार्य आशुतोतरशत श्रीमाद डिवाइन ग्रेस एसी भक्ति वेदांत स्वामी शिल प्रभुपाद की। जय विष्णुपाद परमहंस परिव्राजकाचार्य आशुतोतरशत श्रीमाद डिवाइन ग्रेस भक्ति सिद्धांत सरस्वती गोस्वामी महाराज शिल प्रभुपाद की। अनंत कोटि वैष्णव वृंद की इस्कॉन फाउंडर आचार्य प्रभुपाद की ग्रंथ भगवतं की इताय गौर प्रेमनंदी। ओ ग्लोरी टू द असेंबल डिवोटीज, ओ ग्लोरी टू द असेंबल डिवोटीज, ओ ग्लोरी टू द असेंबल डिवोटीज, ओ ग्लोरी टू शिशि गुरु अंशी गौरंगा। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, भगवते वासुदेवाय, ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, reading from Shrimad Bhagavatam canto 10 entitled the Summum Bonum, chapter 3 entitled the birth of Lord Krishna, text number 20. Just 1 second. स्वात्वं त्रिलोक्य स्थितये स्वमायय, बिभर्षि शुक्लं खलु वार्णद् आत्मनः, सर्गाय रक्तं रजसोपब्रीहितम्। कृष्णा च वर्णं तमसा जनत्यये, सा त्वं त्रिलोकस्थितये स्वमायय, बिभर्षि शुक्लं खलु वर्णं आत्मनः, सर्गाय रक्तं तं रजसोपब्रह्मितम्। कृष्णं च वर्णं तमसा जनत्यये, स्वात्वं त्रिलोक्यं स्थितये स्वमायय, बिभर्षि शुक्लं खलु वर्णद् आत्मनः, सर्गाय रक्तं रजसोपब्रह्मितम्। कृष्णं च वर्णं तमसा जनत्यये,
please chant.
Satvam, your lordship, who are the same person, the transcendence, Trilokyasthitaye, to maintain the three worlds, the upper, middle, and lower planetary systems. Samayaya, by your personal energy, Atma Mayaya, Vibharasi, Ashum, Suklam, the white form of Vishnu in goodness, Kalu, as well as Varanam, color, Atmanaha, of the same category as you, Vishnu Tattva, Sargaya, for the creation of the entire world, Raktam, with the reddish color of Rajaguna, Rajasa, with the quality of passion, Upabrinhitam, being charged, Krishna Cha, and the quality of darkness, Varnam, the color, Tamasa, which is surrounded by ignorance, Jana Atyaye, for the ultimate destruction of the entire creation. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. My Lord, your form is transcendental to the three modes of material nature. Yet, for the maintenance of these three worlds, you assume the white color of Vishnu in goodness. For creation, which is surrounded by the quality of passion, you appear reddish. And at the end, when there is a need for annihilation, which is surrounded by ignorance, you appear blackish. Purport. Vasudev prayed to the Lord, quote, you are called Shuklam. Shuklam, or whiteness, is a symbolic representation of the absolute truth because it is unaffected by the material qualities. Lord Brahma is called Rakta, or red, because Brahma represents the quality of passion for creation. Darkness is entrusted to Lord Shiva because he annihilates the cosmos. The creation, annihilation, and maintenance of this cosmic manifestation are conducted by your potencies, and yet you are always unaffected by those qualities. End of quote. As confirmed in the Vedas, Harirhi Nirguna Shakshat, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is always free from all material qualities. It is also said that the qualities of passion and ignorance are non-existent in the person of the Supreme Lord. In this verse, the three colors mentioned, Shukla, Rakta, and Krishna, are not to be understood literally in terms of what we experience with our senses, but rather as representatives of Satvaguna, Rajaguna, and Tamaguna. After all, sometimes we see that a dog is white, although it is in Tamaguna, the mode of ignorance, illustrating the logic called Bhakanta Nyaya. The dog is such a fool that it runs after the testicles of a bull, thinking them to be a hanging fish that can be taken when it drops. Thus the dog is always in darkness. Vyasadev, however, the compiler of the Vedas, of the Vedic literature, is blackish. But this does not mean that he is in Tamaguna. Rather, he is in the highest position of Satvaguna, beyond the material modes of nature. Sometimes these colors, Sukla, Rakta, Sukla Rattas Tathapita are used to designate the Brahmanas, Kshatriya, Vaishyas and Sudras. Lord Shirodakshai Vishnu is celebrated as possessing a blackish color. Lord Shiva is whitish and Lord Brahma is reddish. But according to Srila Sanatana Goswami in the Vaishnava Toshani Tika, this exhibition of colors is not what is referred to here. The real understanding of Shukla, Rakta and Krishna is as follows. The Lord is transcendental, but for the sake of the creation, he assumes the color of Rakta as Brahma. Again, sometimes the Lord becomes angry, and he says in the Bhagavad Gita 16:19, Tam aham dvishyata kruram samsaresu naradhamam shipamiyajasram ashubham ashurishweva jonishu. Quote, those who are envious and mischievous, who are the lowest among men, are cast by me into the ocean of material existence, into various demoniac species of life. End of quote. To destroy the demons, the Lord becomes angry, and therefore he assumes the form of Lord Shiva. In summary, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is always beyond the material qualities, and we should not be misled into thinking otherwise simply because of sense perception. One must understand the position of the Lord through the authorities, or Mahajans, as stated in the Srimad Bhagavatam 1.3.28, Eti Chamsa Kalapunsa Krishnastu Bhagavan Swayam. Satam Trilokyas Titaye Shramayaya Vibharsi Shuklam Kalubarnan Atmanaha Sargaya Raktam Rajaso Vibrimhitam Krishnam Chabarnam Tamasaya Natyaye. Translation, my Lord, your form is transcendental to the three modes of material nature, yet for the maintenance of these three worlds, you assume the white color of Vishnu in goodness. For creation, which is surrounded by the quality of passion, you appear reddish, and at the end, when there is a need for annihilation, which is surrounded by ignorance, you appear blackish. Om Ajnana Timirandasya Jananjana Shalakaja Chakshur Ummilitam Yena Tasmai Sri Guruve Namaha Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasaya Bhutale Srimate Ramapada Swami Iti Namini. Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasaya Bhutale Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Iti Namini. Namaste Saraswate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvashesha Shunyavadi Pashatyade Shatarine Bancha Kalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanevyo Vaishnavevyo Namo Namaha. We were speaking about the struggle that conditioned souls have to deal with duality. Because duality is not natural, is not compatible with the essence of the living entity, then there's a struggle to actually try to make it uniform. It's almost like a survival need. So therefore, in the conditioned state, we tend to categorize things. There is an intrinsic need to categorize things and to generalize. In one sense, to make things more simpler and uniform, to understand the world. So in the conditioned state, so it is important for us to actually be able to understand our surroundings. And how do we do that? Well, it's by our experience, our immediate experience, and also by the concepts that we receive through whatever circumstance in education, culture, circumstances. So it's all things that we experience and we start to make a conception of the world that define us and allow us to actually sort of function in the world. And when we make these conceptions in order to basically, it's intrinsic. It's almost like psychologists, they analyze this as a almost unconscious thing that we tend to generalize, we tend to categorize. It's important to categorize everything. So some psychologists study that try to explain prejudice, that's how you say, no? Prejudice. It is not necessarily an ideology. They argue about that there's not an ideology. It's not that people come to this concept because, you know, some person came up with a particular ideology and I like that ideology. I recognize myself with that ideology. White supremacist, things like that. Okay. No, but it's actually, they explain that it's the need to categorize things. There's this need, and it's a need for survival. They give an example, for example, in terms of our particular experience, we observe something. We observe a particular situation. Spiders. There's spiders that can be harmless. There's spiders that can bite you and kill you in minutes. So then how do you survive? What is the best strategy to make sure that you can survive a spider and you're not, you know, you're out of harm? So it means that all spiders are venomous, are dangerous. So we have to kill all spiders. So people have this fear of spiders. You see a spider, it has to be killed. But most spiders are actually not venomous. But we make that generalization in order to survive. Because there have been situations in which a spider bite and kills someone. Then, you know, we tend to make all these generalizations. They make that example. And so another thing is that it makes simpler your functioning. You don't have to enter in complexities of things that, oh, okay, so how you recognize a venomous spider? You know, then you have to get into a much deeper studies, what kind of, you know, species are like this, what kind of species are like that, what is the behavior of certain things. So it complicates things. So there is this intrinsic need to categorize, and that is according to my own experience. So in general, we categorize according to my experience. And that creates a big difficulty because we know that our capacity to understand the world is very limited, is flawed. So we have these four flaws of condition that define a conditioned living entity, that is imperfect senses. The other one is we have the tendency to cheat. Then the third one, someone can remind me, I'm doing this a little spontaneous. Imperfect senses, I said, cheating propensity. tendency to be illusioned and the tendency to commit mistakes. So with this, we cannot rely on our experience. We cannot rely on our experience. And certainly, we have to be very careful not to generalize. There's another aspect to it that often we see that we, in a conditioned state, in order to make sense of our struggle, we tend to be to project. Oh, because I observe this happened to me, it's going to happen to everybody. And therefore, you know, I start, you know, I have to not only save myself or save others from this whatever circumstance. So it's a situation that is like that. So when we become educated and we, you know, we receive some knowledge or we become acquainted with a particular type of knowledge, then if we are affected by this conditional state of seeing things according to my own experience and define them, then it's going to be a mess. So Prabhupada explains here that although it is explained here that the Lord appears white as Lord Vishnu, and in general we see that white represents purity. And then he appears red in order to, you know, surrounded by the mortal passion. So the mortal passion represents red represents the mortal passion. And black represents ignorance. So now, we hear that, we categorize. When we're in the condition, we approach knowledge in the conditional state. We categorize things. And therefore, everything that is black means that is ignorant. Everything that is white then means that is pure, like that. Everything that is red means that is hot, passionate. And we see that these colors also sort of represents, it represents the modes. So we hear also how brahmanas are pure, represented by white, and how tamas or sudras, you know, are represented by darkness, by black, like that. So Prabhupada then he says we cannot take literally this in the sense of, you know, categorize things, or because it is like that, because then he puts example. This is a Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati tells this. He defines different process of logic. So he says this Bakanda, which is the logic of the duck. Bakanda means duck. So the logic of the duck. So the dog observes something and makes a conclusion. He sees the testicles of the bull, which are shaped like this, and he concludes, oh, it's a fish and it's hanging loose and it's gonna fall. So the dog is following the bull, expecting the fish to fall, and then he go eat. So it's a foolish logic, because it's just making an assumption just by your sense perception. So Srila Bhaktisiddhanta makes that. So meaning that a white dog or something that is white can be in ignorance. Something that is black could be the epitome of knowledge. So when we make these categorizations based on our particular sense perception, then where it is actually ignorance. There's situations that, at least, you know, my wife is telling me that she confronts sometimes African American people, you know, claiming how, you know, they are, the roots are African, and how the African, the Pan-African, and the thing, and the African, and the blacks, and the African. And then, where are you from? Well, I'm from Africa. So then they get taken back, a white African. You know, it can, so it doesn't make sense, you know? No, you're not from Africa. I'm from Africa, you know, but I'm not from, you know? So actually I'm more African than you, because, you know, I actually from Africa, you know? So, you know, people that, you know, like there are situations right now of how you say when the cop, the thing that the cops do to the African American people, when they make an assumption, oh, it's black, it means that it's, you know, it's a criminal, it's a, someone who is, you know, profiling. So they do profiling according to a particular, you know. So you have an idea, like, you know, there's crime, and, you know, sort of, so African American people, because, you know, many of the more poor areas in this country, you know, many of them are African American. It means, you know, there's more crime, there's more, you know, not so much education. So then, you know, then every African American is affected by this. It's a criminal, or is something like that. And then, you know, they stop people. There was this, I was just hearing one time in this, you know, public radio station, the interview of a famous opera singer in Europe, like super famous. The guy has actually performed for the Queen of England, for this, you know, great personalities, for this president, for Barack Obama, you know, when he was president in the White House. So a celebrity, highly skilled and appreciated and recognized artist, an opera singer. He happens to be a African American, no, not an African American, but a black, you know, person. He came to America and he was driving. And he was not doing anything, he just happened to be driving slow, and the police stopped him. Basically treat him like a criminal. So asking where he was staying and what he was going to do, and he was going to the White House. So, you know, this person, you know, like this guy is just talking some garbage or something like that. So he was narrating this situation that this person doesn't know who I am. You know, he's an associate of this. He's actually been invited by the president. I mean, he was a celebrity. But you generalize and you profile. You generalize, you categorize, and then you're not able to actually connect to a reality. And this is a problem that conditioned souls we have. It's almost like intrinsic. It's intrinsic in there. And it's actually a reaction. It's explained that it's a natural reaction to try to deal with dualities, with things that are, what is the word? Ambiguous. You know, we're not comfortable with ambiguity. We're not comfortable with that. We're not comfortable with things that don't fit, you know, the concept that we have. We expected things to be very, homogeneous. Because in the spiritual world, things is, there is not ambiguity. You know, it's not affected by these dualities of things. Everything is Sat-Chit Ananda. So it's a different type of experience. So in order to survive, in order to be able to function, in order to counteract, to deal with our struggle with dualities, we do that. And as devotees, we have to actually understand that we cannot do that. We cannot rely on our concepts of things, of our categories, of our experience. We need to be guided, therefore. It is explained, and Prabhupada makes the point. He says that, therefore, one must understand the position of the Lord, or actually reality, through the authorities or Mahajans. So, we need the, you know, sadhu, guru, sadhu, and shastra, to be able to understand things, to be able to ascertain things. Otherwise, constantly, we find ourselves defining things according to my experience. And really, the end result is a mess for me, and we can cause mess for others too. Because, you know, my personal experience, we have to understand, is tinged by my condition, by the way I experience things through my lenses. And my lenses right now are colored by all these different conceptions and conditionings that I have. So we have to be very careful of that. Even when we have the instructions, like Mataji Devaki was explaining, even receiving the instructions of the spiritual master, then we take that and sort of, you know, we can take that and put it within my reality, within my observation. So, he actually sort of confirm my generalizations. So we have to be very careful. At least, you know, be aware that propensity is there. Any comments or questions? Jai Baladesh Prabhu.
Hare Krishna, Prabhu. Maybe afterwards, if you allow me, I'll explain a funny incident I had with the police, but since it's a sidetrack, I'll save it for last if you allow, but if not, that's okay. It was pretty funny, actually. but I appreciate your class, thank you, and the points you made were that we generalize, and people, you know, based on our, obviously, like you said, prejudices. But one thing about this verse that I appreciate from Jayapataka Maharaj, especially when concerned the most material nature, and because this verse describes that the Lord is always transcendental, he can never be entangled, these last few verses. In Bhaktisiddhanta's poem, Vaishnava K, what kind of devotee are you? Verse 3, in his commentary to that verse, Jayaprataka Maharaj gave a very good analogy. I've mentioned it before. He says, just as a spider is never entangled by his web, so the Supreme Lord is never entangled in a web of material existence, in a web of lust, anger, greed, pride, envy, or prejudices, because he can see the hearts of every living being. So sometimes we become entangled. That's natural. And I kind of wanted to relate this to your point. One thing we get entangled in is entangled in the idea that we could save others. Like you said, we generalize others. Parents want to save their children from bad associations, sometimes based on prejudice. White supremacists want to save their people, etc. And sometimes, even as devotees, we want to save others from other devotees. Just like, for example, one point I appreciate about Devaki Matsuji's class at Sunday Feast, I had the opportunity to watch it online, is that she said that she was trained to do Vyasa Puja for Prabhupada every year, right, of Vyasa Puja, and we should connect to Prabhupada. But one thing I've noticed in my own life over the years is that I've used Prabhupada, I think it's one of the most offensive, I can speak for myself because I've done it. You know, I feel like it's one of the most offensive mentalities that you could do, is that I've used Prabhupada's glorification as an excuse to criticize others. Just like if I have some dispute with somebody or I'm envious of somebody, and my enemy, quote unquote enemy, is getting some glorification for their preaching, then I might say, why are you listening to them? You know, you should just listen to Prabhupada. Prabhupada's a pure devotee. And so I feel like that's an offensive mentality. And one thing that Martin Luther King says in his speech, Drum Major Instinct, he says, nobody isn't happy about praise. Even when they know they don't deserve it, and even if they don't believe it, the only people who are unhappy about praise is when that praise is going too much towards somebody else. So we may think, oh yes, I'm unhappy when Prabhupada is receiving praise. But one thing, this is my last point, and it's a relevant point that Bhaktivinoda Thakur said. I came across a quote. This is from Jivadharma, chapter 12, page 179. I had the opportunity to write it down, so I won't forget. He says a very good point. He says, people generally tend to have more esteem for great personalities after their death, but are even, but in contrast, they're even neglectful of such personalities when they live. And the reason I appreciate this quote is that if Prabhupada told me I'm going to start a worldwide movement at the age of 70 years old with no money, with no contacts, do you think I'll be successful? No. You know, so that's the tendency, is that when somebody has external results, the tendency is Prabhupada, Prabhupada. But when Prabhupada didn't have any success, what's he see when I'll objectively speak? So what are some steps we can move forward to use glorifying Prabhupada? Because I'll objectively see, if Prabhupada was here with no external success, I'll criticize him too. I'm like, you're not going to be successful. Why don't you go retire? You know. So what are some steps we can move forward to gain the realization that the Lord could give anyone Krishna Shakti, Kali Kaleda Dharma, Krishna Nama, Sankirtan, Krishna Shakti, Vina Nahi, Tata Pravatana. There's greatness within everyone. Why don't we take opportunities to appreciate and glorify devotees instead of using Prabhupada as an excuse to criticize others, his glorification? Because if he was present here, I can speak for myself. I'm not going to speak for others, but I know I want to glorify him. And that's, we see that the materialist conception, when celebrities are poor and nobody knows them, people treat them like crap. But when they get some money, it's like a material motivation. Oh, let me glorify you now because I want to be in your association. You have prestige, you have money, etc. So how do we give up this most offensive mentality? I can't speak for anyone else, but it's a mentality that I carry. So maybe you could speak on that.
You mean how we can avoid having the offensive mentality that glorifying Srila Prabhupada?
How we could... essentially that we can't stop people from glorifying others, and how we could appreciate others, not to minimize Prabhupada, but not use Prabhupada as an excuse to criticize others, which is most offensive. And I speak for myself, it's most offensive mentality I had, and I had no happiness in doing that. So how we could give small Vyasa Pujas to everyone. Prabhupada doesn't need our Vyasa Puja. It's good to do it, but not use it as an excuse to criticize others.
Yeah, I think as a followers of Srila Prabhupada, if we can take Prabhupada's example and Prabhupada's instructions, then we'll be safe. I mean, especially Prabhupada's final instruction is very, it was very revealing for all of us who are followers of Srila Prabhupada. He says what he expects from us, and the thing that will make him the pleasing the most as his final instruction. He could have said many things. He could have said, you know, open many centers, make many devotees, make a pure devotee, translate, you know, all the different books, this and that. He could say so many things, but he says one thing that is very revealing, and is something that we have to understand and go deeper and deeper and deeper in the understanding of this particular instruction. And if we take that, you know, that will certainly protect us from any of these offensive mentalities, and also our sort of condition to do this thing of prejudice and bickering or this or whatever. He said to cooperate with each other. You show your love to me on how you cooperate with each other. Cooperation, why? You know, I mean, if we start with why Prabhupada said that, it's very unexpected. But it's very profound, because this is that's at the root of everything. So it's the most purifying thing. Devaki Mataji was saying the most purifying thing is how you deal with each other, especially with your peers. So, cooperation. So cooperate. We're trying to take that instruction. We cooperate. Cooperate means you have to be open to someone else's different reality than yours. Because you don't need to sort of make so much effort to work with someone who is just like you, who have the same, you know, sort of propensities and ideologies and tendencies and, you know, likes. Yeah, we click very well, you know, have the same background. But when there is difference, that's when the things get difficult. And then that's when we try to, again, categorize, make it homogeneous. Everything should be like me, you know? So, cooperating is, it requires Krishna consciousness, and that's what we should do. That's the instruction. So, any other question? Krishna Archana.
I'm going to try and formulate something. You know, by the example given in the purport, and you're putting an emphasis on one's perceptual reality in some sense, putting one outside of the factual reality. I guess the question would be, if one is observing that say if perceptual reality is expressed and the perceptual reality is held onto, and that perceptual reality clearly isn't in accord with factual reality, clearly there's a need to hold on to the safety of a known reality. So how could one be of assistance if you know, one understands that somebody has a need to hold on to the safety of a perceptual reality, however incongruous it is with factual reality.
I think something like that was touched in the seminar of Devaki Mataji, in terms of dealing with, how she put it, you know, when we deal with something that is out of place with the principles of humility and tolerance, and there was another thing that she said, respect. I mean, the Trinarapisunichena principle. Then that can actually transform others. Is she was explaining as a quality of someone who can give shelter. Someone who can give shelter have to be very balanced in self, and therefore you not necessarily have to force something or force an understanding, but once by one's example and especially by the way one's dealt with that perceptive wrong reality or the wrong approach, then without becoming take it personally or becoming affected by it, then it can help change the situation. So how we have to how I mean it's a very high ideals. Basically, you have to be Krishna conscious in one sense. What happens when you are not Krishna conscious, and how to best do that is a matter of cultivation, I think. That's how I understand it. So we have to be able to cultivate the you know, these qualities. And if we feel affected by the other person's sort of sticking to that perceptive, you know, perception, and if we start to get affected by it, you know, start to arise something in me, some emotion or negative emotion or any emotion, then I have to take a pause. She say, take a pause, you know, and gather yourself again, you know, so deal some other time with it. So the principle I think that I understood is you have to be more or less very perceptive of your personal situation, how your emotions are affected. You have to be in contact with your needs, with your emotions, with your path, with the purpose of the things that you're trying to do. By practice, by consistent practice, we can get better and better at it. I don't know, is that touches? You have anything to add to that? Okay. Karunanidhi Prabhu, just the last question.
Here is a, in the purport, Srila Prabhupada quoted that verse, very nice verse, like Bhagavad Gita 16:19. So that means Kimpanti, like that, no? how Krishna throws those who are mischievous and envious, they are put into the, you know, material existence and demoniac, you know, species. So here we can see that in Krishna Lila, like even though Samba was the son of Krishna, you know, but because he was mischievous with his friends, you know, they made, you know, like they put some iron into the stomach and they mugged with so many saintly persons. So how the whole dynasty was finished because of that. So we have to be very careful. So how to not to mischievous, even joke also. Sometimes, you know, we have to be careful. That's what I was thinking. And if you want to add anything in this comment on this verse.
Prabhupada quoted that verse to just make the point that Krishna can be angry, and anger in the Lord doesn't mean that he is overtaken by the mode of ignorance. So the Lord is transcendental, his anger is transcendental. So, you know, again, we experience anger, and anger, you know, it comes from, you know, when ignorance takes you. And, you know, so that's our reality, that's our experience. So, you know, God is angry, then how is that possible? You know? So it doesn't fit. Or, you know, or then, okay, I guess he's an angry, you know, so therefore he's depicted like a judge, you know, like stern judge, you know, he's angry because we all like sinners, so he's angry at us, you know, so he's just going to punish us forever, you know, like that. So, is that, you know, this tendency to project, and Prabhupada is making the point, God can be angry, but he's transcendental. His anger is not, you know, he's not affected by the mode of ignorance. He's transcendental. So, he's making the point. Therefore, he says, to understand the Lord and his different manifestations, we have to hear from the Mahajans. So then he says, you know, Ete Cham Sakalapunsa Krishna Stu Bhagavan Swayam. He is, you know, he is a supreme, the original, you know, that, like that. So, it's very good. So I'd like to stop here. Garantara Shriman Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Thank you very much, everybody.